This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. I don't know if you can hear it or not, like my voice I think sounds a little bit rough. I came down with a really bad sickness at the end of last week, so I'm struggling through, I'm trying to make this all work, but if I sound weird here in the intro, outro, and kind of the middle portion, this is why. There's a bit of a sickness still on the back of my throat. We're still here in our Sondheim Revisited mini-season, inviting some new guests and even sometimes some returning guests to talk about a song that they have not discussed before, but that has appeared on this show already. And something that should probably be investigated more so than in this episode is why people are so taken with Follies, because that seems to be primarily the show that people are drawing from in this mini season, but you'll see that in the upcoming weeks as well. One thing I didn't really point out here last week is the fact that I was trying something new, and I'd love to hear your feedback on it, of actually having the clips broken out. So instead of myself reading the lyrics, listening to a performance and just talking about a specific performance, at least in this mini season, I thought that would be an interesting way to explore it. I don't know if I'll be doing that in like the main seasons, at least for the first run through, because I really want to highlight what the word choice is, but let me know. I would love to hear what your feedback is on that, so to see if it's something we could play around with a little bit more in the future. But there's really no reason to delay any longer, so let's get into talking about I'm Still Here with my guest, Emily Clark.
Good times and bum times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here.
God, right you are.
Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer, but I'm here. 10 years.
Emily Clark, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kyle. This is awesome.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of descriptors, I think, that we can level at you, which is like historian, actor, teacher, director, podcaster.
multi-hyphenates. I wear all the
multi-hyphenate.
Yes.
Yeah, you're a pentagonal threat, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. But you are one of the co-hosts of the Dear Friends podcast. I thought maybe you could let us know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I do a podcast with a few other musical theater kind of folk with my friend Jess McAnally from Musicals with Cheese, which is a great podcast. Mm-hmm. And then my friend Christy Esterly from Musical Hell on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then I had my musical theater show on YouTube, Stealing Focus. So we all kind of got together and decided to come up with the Dear Friends podcast. And so it's like a write-in advice podcast for the musical minded, but also we've kind of just been segueing into like kind of talking about whatever topics we want lately, which has proven pretty great. I think like we started doing that with the Wicked casting announcement or something, and then it's been a lot of fun since then. So yeah, we're all over podcasty land.
Yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are on like Wicked as a show specifically, but I will say this, I've never seen such like a difference in like, hey, this movie is coming out, here's the casting, it's like, oh, that's cool. And then that announcement comes out, it's like, it's been split out into two movies, and everyone's like, what are you talking about? Like, there's a huge difference in reactions to those two announcements.
Oh, yeah, like, I actually think the casting announcement is perfect. I was like, this is perfect casting. Mm. I think it's genius. It's going to appeal to the Broadway folk and to, like, the mainstream normies. Like, I'm all about it. But then when they were like, no, we're going to throw in lore and we need a franchise really, really bad. And we've had the rights for this for a long time. So we're going to make it happen. Damn it. So,
I was not the first one to make this kind of quip online, but it is so hilarious. There's always that argument that's made. It's like, why did they cut this song or that song from a show when they make the movie version? I'm the movie guy, though, and I understand that there's sometimes you do need to make cuts. I'm totally fine. But of all shows, it's like, no, every song is sacred in this show. I'm like, well, I don't know about that. Like, there's a couple I can think of that you could cut out of this score.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to have to add more. And that's the other goal, is to get that. You have two different projects now to get that sweet, sweet, you know, new song Oscar. So
yeah, I know. Well,
they're going to do what they're going to do. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be whatever.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
What was the moment that you fell in love with theater?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I'm really lucky. My dad was an actor. My mom is a musical theater person, a musician. So there's kind of never been a time when theater wasn't a big part of my life, mm-hmm. you know, doing kids theater and stuff like that. I don't have a first musical memory because they've always been there, right. But like, I do remember like being introduced to Into the Woods really young, like really, really young, like before it was cool to be, you know, being introduced into
like
the woods.
Like at 5 years old.
Literally at 5 years old. And so like Sondheim has always been huge, huge, mm-hmm. huge. But yeah, as I got, you know, kind of into my tween years, I got really into performing too. So it's just always been there. Right. It's just always a huge part of my life.
We'll get to Sondheim here in a moment, but like, what were your shows at that early age? Like, what were the ones you were becoming obsessed with?
Oh gosh. Well, I feel like, okay, so I grew up, you know, I'm 80s baby, grew up in the 90s. Sure. So Rent was extremely formative for me when I was like 15. My Rent poster's on the wall right now. I ended up marrying a former Roger. Like it's...
Whoa, okay.
I wish I could go back in time and tell my 15-year-old self that with me pining over like Adam Pascal. But like Rent was huge for me. Again, Sondheim, I remember my mom giving me like all of her Sondheim like records and... listening to all them mm-hmm. and being exposed to like Sweeney Todd and being like, this is blowing my mind. oh gosh, let's see. I'm trying. I also really loved, I love the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals. I love the Golden Age musicals a lot. Those were really formative for me. As much as I'm like not super psyched about this revival, I'm a big Music Man apologist. I do really, really love the Music Man. Mm-hmm. Harold Hill's a dream role. but I could probably go on and on about all the musicals I like.
Well, I think we're, by the sense of it, we're probably roughly the same age. Yeah. So, but what you're keen in on is something that I'm always so afraid to bring up because it's going to sound like old man yells at cloud. Like it's really what it feels like to me. But it does. This is true, I think, across media. And it's so fascinating to me to see, like, when I grew up, there just seemed like there was this desire, or there was maybe just access, or just played on TV. I don't really even know. But it's like, yeah, there's the new stuff coming out that I was like being exposed to and like I was becoming like a fan of. But then I would also go back and take a listen or a watch of older stuff, or was being exposed to older stuff.
Yeah,
Like newer generations, I would even say like even if they're just 10 years younger, like born in the 90s almost, mm-hmm. there seems to be like, well, we started listening to stuff in the 90s and then never went backwards. There seems to be this weird like division sometimes.
No, I mean, it's a huge thing about like why I want to kind of segue into musical theater history, because it's amazing how many people make their livelihood or their fandom all about mm-hmm. musical theater and they don't really know the history of it. And a lot of that is, you could trace that to like, I would say like what, like in the year 2000, 2001, when it started going from like mega musicals to like off the charts. Everything is just a big commercial corporate.
Right.
And there's so many musicals now, they're just catered towards teenagers on, and that's perfectly mm-hmm. fine. Like, you know, they can have their Mean Girls and stuff. It's totally fine. It's not for me. It's for them.
Right.
And if it gets them into musicals, great. But then there's so many times we'll all be on like Twitter or you know, Facebook or something. And they'll ask a question about, has this ever happened before? Does this ever happen? And I go, yeah, I mean, this concept musicals have been around for a while, you know, or stuff like that.
For a long time. Well, I think even if we're talking about like the golden age of musicals, even though I'm not a huge fan of that terminology, but regardless, the golden age of musicals, I think people sometimes don't realize they did tackle pretty heavy subjects a lot of the time back then. Again, maybe not in the most like culturally sensitive ways all the time, but there was this attempt, at least by Hammerstein and mm-hmm. some of his contemporaries, to be like, let's push this forward. Let's try something.
Oh, there were a lot, you know, you could say that about like Lerner and Lowe or any of those kind of those songwriting teams that tried to push the envelope a little bit. And I would say, you know, the frivolous stuff was, when I think frivolous, I think like the 30s, you know, like when or the 20s, or I think like a pre-Showboat kind of world. To me, that's more just like kick lines and stuff. But to me, the golden age, sure, you had your kind of escapist comedies, but you know, you can't get to the stuff we have now if you don't have stuff like You've Got to Be Carefully Taught first, you know, things like that.
So I think you already answered this question, but it sounds like Into the Woods probably was your first introduction to Sondheim, or is it something
different? No, it was definitely Into the Woods. And then, you know, my mom used to do, my mom and my dad actually met doing a funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Amazing. What were their roles?
Philia and Hero.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So they've always just been big Sondheim people. My dad passed away a few years ago and I was going through kind of his stuff and I found just like a grad school paper he had written on Sondheim. And I was looking through this and I was like, Jesus, I could have written this. This is crazy. But Into the Woods was the first one. And then I don't remember what came next. I feel like it was all a wash. I remember there was a point when I was in high school where my mom was like, hey, you know how we have that Into the Woods that we always watch? You should watch Sunday in the Park with George. You would really like this. And Sunday is like my number one favorite. Like it's pretty much a masterpiece. So yeah, I can't get enough of it. Then I was reading all these like biographies about him and I wanted to find all the weird cut songs and different tracks. Mm-hmm. And I just got so into that probably when I was in high school.
For me, that was always, that was the cool part of musical theater fandom. I don't know why this was such a revelation to me. It's like, wait, there's cut songs from shows? Like the things that didn't make it in? And then people get like super obsessed by that and try and find recordings of it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so when you're young and you're not like exactly working in theater like that, you don't know that like the draft that goes to Broadway went through a million other drafts before that. Especially now in like our modern landscape, it's just all workshops all the time. So
do you know the first time you encountered Follies?
Okay, so I think I was in high school and it was I was like, okay, I have to like learn every Sondheim show. And so I'd gotten to like Sweeney Todd and Company and A Little Night Music. And then I was like, okay, I've got to find more. So then I was like looking into like Merrily and then Follies. And I remember I was at like the yeah, back in the day when we used to go to like album stores and CD stores. Yes, so I went to like the CD store in the mall. And the only one they had was the 80s concert version with Mandy Patinkin and Barbara Cook and all them. Yeah. And so that was the one that I got into. But I think I had heard some of the songs before that. Like, I feel like Broadway Baby, I had to have.
I was going to say, like, some of them came, have become standard. So
I think Broadway Baby like, was even one of those songs that, like, was given to me by like a voice teacher, like when I was probably 15 or something. Cause you know, it's a cute little belty song that you could just sing, you know.
They kneeled in front of you and bestowed it upon you. Here I am giving you this.
There you go. Enjoy. It's in your range. You can be funny. It's great.
And what was your interpretation or impression, I guess, on that first listen?
Well, I think it's really hard to get Follies when you're like 15 or 16.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I liked it, but it definitely wasn't one of the ones that like I listened to over and over and over again. As I got older, and you know, a lot of these Follies songs are used in so many Sondheim reviews because you can pull them out of context and they still work. So like a few years ago, my husband and I did Side by Side by Sondheim of all the Sondheim reviews, but we did it. And so he did Could I Leave You? And I did I'm Still Here. And that, you know, it's just one story in a song. So like that was a point where and that was only a few years ago. So that was when I started really kind of getting into that song. But even before that, like as I got older, like I was like, okay, I'm getting more where all these where, you know, Phyllis and Sally and Ben and Buddy are coming from and some of the other characters. And I feel like it's going to resonate more and more as I age, like so many Sondheim shows do, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's remarkable, at least for me. I mean, Into the Woods does seem to be predominantly the gateway drug for most people to get into Sondheim. It's that or kind of sometimes West Side Story, I would say, that kind of gets people into liking it. But there are a couple of his shows that I'm like upfront by. I was like, first time I listened to Company, I was like, I don't know if I get this.
Yeah.
Until you get into like your early 30s, like, oh, no, I get this. I understand what's going on here.
Yeah. There's a lot of me going like, why can't they just figure it out?
Yeah, they can do it. They're in New York City. Yeah. And then Follies, I think it was a similar trajectory where it's like, oh, the older you get, you kind of like sympathize with them more. The most recent one for me has been Passion, which is I also listened to that for the first time when I was like in my early 20s. I'm like, I don't know if I'm totally understanding this. And then I've totally grown to like love that score a whole lot.
Yeah, I need to get that's the one that always like eluded me for a long time because I never really loved it. It was just a little too, for lack of a better term, like Andrew Lloyd Webbery for me. It's not Andrew Lloyd Webbery, but you know, it's that kind of like vibe. And that wasn't really my thing. But I feel like more and more I need to just be like, you know what, Emily, just give it another try. It's okay.
Jury is out if I'll ever get into Bounce, but we'll
Bounce. I saw Bounce. Yeah. It was not good.
Okay.
not good.
Someone will crack it at some point.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. God.
So talking about this song in particular, mm-hmm. I'm Still Here. I feel like this is, you know, a fairly iconic song from this score. It has been performed by a bunch of different people on either concept albums or Follies revivals,
yeah.
That sort of thing.
In that concert, it was Carol Burnett, I remember.
That's right. And I think I think even Julie Andrews has done, I forget. There's name a diva from like the last 30 years.
You hit a certain age, you got to do I'm Still Here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. We're going to be talking about the one that Elaine Stritch actually sang at her At Liberty show. That's the one we're going to be listening to here today. A couple things first. Like, there is this character by the name of Carlotta mm-hmm. that sings this song in the show. Mm-hmm. And she has a few things, a few book scenes here and there as part of the, oh my gosh, who's that lady in the mirror? No,
yeah,
that's not
who's that woman? Who's that woman?
Who's that woman? That's what it is. Part of that tap dancing routine. Which, did you know, I just realized this. Have you read the new Paul Gemignani biography that just came out?
Oh, no, I haven't yet. But okay. I've heard about it.
According to that, maybe I was misreading it. But from what I understood is that they actually recorded the tap dancing so that it sounded louder to the audience in the original production. Oh. But the women still had to hit their marks. Like, exactly right, just to make the tap dancing sound louder. I'm like, that sounds very complicated
right?
to do. So anyways, fun little fun fact for that book.
Just mute the feet all together, and then you just got yeah. tap dancing. Coverage,
that's
baby.
Right. But I don't know, do you have anything that you want to say about the character of Carlotta or how you interpret her?
You know what? I have my script of it right here. And like, I was looking at like her stage direction and says like, when she like first comes in, it's like, says she's a one-time movie star in terrific shape for 50. She is the kind of woman who is not, I know, right? She is the kind of woman who has not only seen everything, but has liked the look of it. And I think that's pretty fun. She looks, that's the vibe. She's like, I'll give it a try.
Sure,
man, what have I got to lose? Yeah, I've seen it all. But yeah, there's a lot of like kind of ladies in this show who have like kind of a number that kind of like typifies or exemplifies something that you would have seen in like the Ziegfeld Follies or the vaudeville or something, which is the, like the whole show is mm-hmm. a nostalgia bomb for people in the 1970s. Just yeah. like Fosse was doing with Chicago. It's like, remember right. 50 years ago, but all Sondheim had to wrap it up in all this like angst and concept, but which is great. I do like that, you know, the oldest lady comes out and does Broadway Baby, the like kind of French lady comes yeah. out, does A Paris, and the little couple, I think it was Compton and Green in the original, in that concert.
Yeah.
They sang a little duet. And then, yeah, then Carlotta is sitting there like talking with all these guys. And then they kind of wander off and then she goes into the song. And like, yeah, that's kind of it. They're kind of just there for like atmosphere and like the vibe of nostalgia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you described this really, really well. I think the only other thing to mention, talking about cut songs.
Yeah.
Is that this was like the second try at what was supposed to happen at this point. Because Can That Boy Foxtrot was the original take. But famously, and I kind of, I don't kind of agree. I do agree with Sondheim. It's like after the first stanza, you kind of understand that song.
Yeah.
And the joke to it. And it's like, we don't need four more.
And then it just keeps going. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't need it. Just put it in. I think they put it in the Birdcage or something. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, something like
that's
that.
All the Sondheim cut songs in that movie.
It's actually remarkable. I think there's three Sondheim cut songs in that movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just rewatched it again last year. I'm like, oh, I now understand.
Right.
This is so weird.
Oh, love is in the air. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think the bigger conversation we have to have before we jump into the lyrics here then is Elaine Stritch.
Oh,
right?
Man.
Who is quite the character unto herself.
I love Elaine Stritch, man. She's so great.
Famously, I believe, I don't know if this was her start, but was the understudy to Ethel Merman in Gypsy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Never went on for her, but.
Mer McMahon, New Haven, New York, that whole story. Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Oh, my God, yeah. That hilarious story, yeah, if people don't know, it's like, had to go on for, was it the.
She was like doing a week, like covering, or she was like doing like a show out of town, but still covering Ethel for like a week.
Yeah, so weird. So anyways, yeah, she was going out of town and get caught in a snowstorm. It's very funny. Go and listen
so
to.
So good.
Yeah, I don't think ever went on, because Ethel Merman was all about, like, I never miss a show.
Yeah, yeah,
even
yeah.
if she had to phone it in, mm-hmm. she would never miss a show. But became kind of a character actress herself. Of course, was in Company very famously. The Ladies Who Lunch was written for Elaine Stritch specifically.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you want to say about Elaine Stritch?
I just love her. I like, she's an actor first, and she can sing, but she has her range. And I'm Still Here works great for her, in my opinion, because it might as well just be one big monologue. You know, sure. It goes from like the 30s through to the present, you know, in mm-hmm. in like 6 minutes. So she has the gravitas, but she has the humor. Like, her dry delivery of everything is just so spot on. And it's this kind of musical theater performer that I kind of yearn for, that we don't really have anymore, at least not on right. Broadway anymore. Everyone is just a singer first. And like, that's fine. I love me like a good singer. I love me some belting and stuff, but there's less, I guess, variety of voices. And I miss kind of those people who were maybe actors first, or who could take something like a Sondheim piece where it doesn't really matter. Some of these songs, mm-hmm. if you're the best singer in the world, it's all about the emotion and the character and the purpose of the moment rather than, you know, opting up. And I like that she kind of represents that, you know, rough edges and all. Like,
I mean, that is the fascinating thing. And I was, you know, as a teenager, I was embarrassed by this. And now I've just kind of embraced it because, like, whatever, I enjoy it. Which is those unique voices that you hear, mm-hmm. right? It is, if you go into a car and, like, Carol Channing is singing.
I know.
Or even Ethel Merman, in a way, is singing. I'm trying to think, Elaine Stritch is singing. It's like, is it, quote unquote, like, good? It's like, well, it fits the role perfectly, and that's why I enjoy it so much. But like, yes, if you are conditioned to like pop vocals yeah. or anything like that, you're like, what am I listening to?
Yeah, and I don't need Elaine Stritch in like Mamma Mia. That's the thing. Like,
sure, sure.
But yeah. I feel like it, the only thing you get now is like kind of just the pop belty correct. Stuff, and you get a little less of like, you know, maybe I don't want that right now. Maybe I'm in the mood for something a little more introspective than belty. I don't know, but.
Right.
But Patti LuPone is still doing it, is doing Lady Two Lunch right now.
Patti LuPone is still there.
So.
Yelling about Chris Harper.
But she can sing, obviously.
Yeah. of course. Not everything has to be Dear Evan Hansen is basically what I'm trying to say.
No. Dear Evan Hansen doesn't even have to be Dear Evan Hansen.
Sure. Hey everyone, just Kyle breaking into the conversation here to tell you about some of the people and organizations that help this show continue to go. Of course, if you'd like to help support the show for absolutely free, you can give a rating and review on whatever app you listen to podcasts in. That's, of course, greatly appreciated. And if you'd like to help monetarily, which will only help to grow and make this show better, you can do so over at our Patreon page. Please do not donate if it impacts you negatively financially. I should also give a huge thank you to the God That's Good tier from Patreon. That's Jack, Todd, Carrie, Louise, Christopher, and Steven. Putty Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Putting Together is brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. Alberta Blue Cross understands that running a small business is tough, and they understand that business owners in Alberta are busy. Let Alberta Blue Cross give you peace of mind with a group benefit plan. They offer health, dental, life, and disability coverage for your employees. Alberta Blue Cross group benefits plan are easy to manage anywhere, anytime, and on any device, making it easy for you and your employees to access. To learn more and explore your options, head on over to ab.bluecross.ca. This episode of Putting It Together is also brought to you by Park Power, your friendly local utilities provider in Alberta, offering internet, electricity, and natural gas with low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. In Alberta, you do get to choose who to buy your internet, electricity, and natural gas from. If you choose Park Power, you are choosing a positive local business. Plus, Park Power shares its profits with local not-for-profits who are working to make a difference in their communities. Shopping local is very important to Park Power's owner, Chris Kozowski, and we love local here at the Alberta Podcast Network. So it's a great fit. Learn more at parkpower.ca. All right, well, let's get into these lyrics here now. We're going to see if this is an epic fail or not. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to our first clip here. A long intro.
Good times and bum times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer, but I'm here. I've stuffed the dailies in my shoes, strummed ukuleles, sung the blues, seen all my dreams disappear, but I'm here.
I'm always impressed that he does rhyme dailies with ukuleles. Oh. I think that's really fun.
Yeah, it's one of those, you jerk, why are you so good at that stuff? You know, if you know anything about Elaine Stritch's life or her personal mm-hmm. life, it just like makes so much sense for her to be singing lines like seen all my dreams disappear, but I'm here. Like mm-hmm. it just hits so hard because she was knocked down over and over and over again for lots of different reasons, you know, and then she just kind of kept on coming back and outlived so many people.
Sure. I just like to, like, the way this song even starts, even in the original Broadway cast of Follies, this is like made to be like, I'm walking into like an underground club and there's a smoke filled room and there's a lounge singer yeah. up on the stage with a single spotlight.
And that sax.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, this is a lounge singer and this grows into like a huge orchestra, but it just feels like you're being entered into like this world just by those opening few notes, yeah. which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah. It's like going back in time a little bit.
And now I'm totally blanking on it. I think Sonny even writes about it in this book. He was using a few different film actresses in his mind as he was writing this song out, just as like a template mm-hmm. to like fill in certain things. But you definitely feel this feels like a real lived in character. And you'll see that as we kind of go through the song here more and more, I find. But
yeah, it helps. It helps, too, when you think about like we were saying, you have these like older kind of divas that we as mm-hmm. a community are kind of familiar with, having them sing a song like this, it just kind of adds another layer to it. Like with Elaine Stritch, like when she does it, you're just like, yeah, she's been around the block.
For sure. Well, this is how she continues on here.
I've slept in shanties, guest of the WPA, but I'm here. Danced in my scanties, $3 a night was the pay. But I'm here. I've stood on red lines with the best, watched while the headlines did the rest. In the Depression, was I depressed? Nowhere near. I met a big financier, and I'm here.
Who doesn't love a great big financier?
Oh, my gosh. Right? I love it. Those like two chunks are just like, OK, we've hit the Depression. Like, here's the 1930s. Mm-hmm. Here we go. I always love the part about the WPA because I did a video kind of about the Federal Theater Project.
Right.
Like, a year ago at this point. And so now that always just kind of hits me like, oh, so she was doing theater. She was touring around thanks to the New Deal.
Right. Because what does the WPA stand for again?
The Works Progress Administration.
That's
right. So
it's
part of the New Deal. And then they created the Federal Theater Project. It's like one of the only times the government was like, we're going to sponsor theater across the country.
Which does not exist anymore in the United States, correct?
No. No. Like, it didn't.
Beat.
Yeah, no. It did not really even last. I don't even think it lasted like 5 years or something like that. So.
There is definitely like this, again, this story being told here about like, listen, I had to essentially strip for money.
Yeah.
Right.
She did bread lines and then she landed a big fish.
Yeah, that's right. Which we can only hope for. That's the goal in life, right?
That's all we need. The big financier. Yeah. And that's such a great, you get a good laugh after that, right? In the Depression, was I depressed? I met a big financier.
Yeah, because nowhere near financier, mm-hmm. I'm still here. Those are the three rhyming words that we end off this like section here with.
Yeah.
There is this remarkable thing that I think this song does so well is that oftentimes I don't really even see the rhyme coming until mm-hmm. it actually comes. So often too, you'll sometimes like a word is used in a lyric. I'm like, oh, they're probably going to rhyme that with this word. And then I'm usually right. But in this song, it's like, I'm never 100% sure. Like, where's that going? And it's like, oh, that's fun that you just rhyme
that. Even like just like shanties and scanties. Like there's something fun about that feels like trashy, which is kind of like what they're going for right here. Mm-hmm. And then going to financier and here. I don't know. There's something about that.
Well, let's get into like the heaviest section with all these references. It's like basically a compressed Family Guy episode where it's just references here now.
For... It's like, do you know the 30s? Here we go.
Here we go.
I've been through Gandhi, Wally, and Windsor's affair. But I'm here. Amos and Andy, Marjan and platinum hair. But I'm here. I got through AB's Irish Rose, five Dion babies, major bowls, had heebie-jeebies, four BBs, bathysphere. I lived through Brenda Frazier, and I'm here.
That's so good how she did major bows.
Yes, it's like up and down.
I love it.
I'm just going to call it one thing. I don't really care about this, but I know that Sondheim would probably have given her a note on this. She flips
Windsor and Wally.
What the lyric is, yeah. It's supposed to be Windsor and Wally's affair, yeah. But she says Wally and Windsor's affair.
He would have walked right up to her if they were in the booth, but they weren't, so it's fine. When I did this song, I the first thing I did was like go to Google and be like, because some of them I knew Windsor and Wally's affair. I think that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. Wallace Simpson and Edward, you know, he abdicated
the throne.
Yes.
Watch the King's Speech if you want to see more information on
that. Yes, or the Crown, I guess they get into that
the Crown,
too.
Yeah.
But then all the other ones are just like 1930s pop culture, like Brenda Fraser, just the Paris Hilton.
Yeah, Paris Hilton of the 1930s. Like she just went to debutante balls. Like that was basically what she was famous for.
Yeah.
Really, really weird.
And like five Dion babies, just quints, just famous.
Yep.
Famous quintuplets.
I will say this, growing up in Canada, again, at the time I was, they were
super
in the news. They were still a thing because like two of them had died and they were still seeking like money from the government because they had sued the government and stuff. So I still, that was a huge news story in like the early 90s or late 80s.
Oh my gosh.
I still remember that like vividly. And my parents told me about them and like they were basically treated as like zoo animals that people would come and look at.
Because it was
stuff
the
like
Depression
like, was,
and they were like, well, we got five babies. So, you know, the internet didn't exist yet. You had to go look at something. Yes. Make your bank.
So human children is really what we want.
Yeah, they all look alike.
Yeah, the bathysphere, right? Like this little submersible thing. But heebie-jeebies for BBs bathysphere is just a great little couplet thing going on there. The biggest thing is like nothing shocks me more than I guess how plays are treated on Broadway. I don't know how else to term this because like AB's Irish Rose, I would bet you anything if I went to 20 random people on the street, even in New York City, one of them might know what AB's Irish Rose is, I think.
Like,
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I had to look it up too. Like,
but still to this day, third longest running play on Broadway.
I mean, it's mind blowing. It's crazy. Like, and there's no really, it's like a Jewish guy and an Irish Catholic girl. It's like, it would have been, I guess, the plot to like, West Side Story if they hadn't changed it from East Side Story, I guess. But
right.
Yeah, I know. I would never. I don't even think, do we even get that? Like, are there remakes of AB's Irish Rose? I have no idea.
I think I looked it up. There was, I think, a revival in the 50s that lasted half a year or something. Like, it didn't last very long. There was
done.
A movie that was made of it in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. And then I went down a rabbit hole because I remember looking this up before. I'm like, I know that it's been long running, but what has surpassed it? And like the two other ones are also shows I've never heard of in my entire life. Like the other.
What are they?
Let me see if I still have this up here. I think. So number one. Yeah. Life with Father is number one. Which after it went from 1939 to 1947.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, ran for a ton of time, but has never been revived from the looks of it. And then Tobacco Road is the second longest one. It ran from 33 to 41, but had a revival in 42, 43, and then 1950. So at least there was some revivals that were tried for Tobacco Road. You know, the old play that everyone knows called Tobacco Road.
Yeah, good old Tobacco Road. Like how I read that in, you know, ninth grade along with Romeo and Juliet. Never heard of it.
So anyways, this interesting how I find like the longest running plays, like nobody has heard of.
Yeah.
Whereas at least in the if you look at musicals, we have what? It's Wicked, Cats, Lion King, Chicago, Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, we all know that.
So we all know those ones. They're still running, most of those ones. So, I mean,
yeah, maybe it's because plays, like, you don't, those kind of show, Broadway shows, you have to do them on Broadway because you need the budget. I feel like a lot of these plays, you could just do them anywhere because that's the whole thing with plays.
True. And I don't know what the market is for, like, touring plays, like Broadway across Canada has for musicals and stuff like that. But yeah, so lots of different references that are going on here that she has survived.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that had to have been fun at the time because, like, what's the 1970s? You know, the characters who were like Phyllis and Sally's age. Yeah, like they would have been sitting there going, oh.
Well, I think that's what Sondheim has said too a little bit. Is like 71 was this weird time where, like, sure, like a lot of the people coming to Broadway would have probably known some of these things.
Yeah.
But we're getting on the tail end of even that, where any younger crowd coming into this, like, I have no frame of reference for any of this.
I think you get like a few of those nostalgic for like the early days shows, like you get in the 70s and like early 80s, you know, 1980, you get 42nd Street. But then, like, even Annie, like I did Annie a few years ago. I was Miss Hannigan. It was so much fun. But I, you know, I've taught every Annie song. I've directed Annie Jr. I know Annie in and out, but doing it, it was a thing where I was like, oh yeah, there's actually a lot of like really fun references to history and like kind of jokes for the grownups. Like it's a family show, not just a kid's show.
Yeah. I think that's the secret to Annie and why it's revived and all that kind of stuff is like, you think it's a kid's show until you go to it, like, oh, this is for adults. Actually, most of this show is for adults.
And then you hear Herbert Hoover and you hear the New Deal jokes and, like, you know, the Warbucks is Republican jokes, and it's fun. Yeah. So it's like,
10-year-olds are not understanding any of this.
No, they're just watching the kids tap dance and that's fine.
but I think about that too, like even Grease, right? Grease comes out in the 70s and is a throwback to the 50s. Like this happens like every 20 years, I think. There's a show that is just a throwback to 20 years before.
Oh yeah, we're having the 90s and even early 2000s nostalgia now.
What is Jagged Little Pill, but just like, remember the 90s, everyone?
I'm honestly like, I'm not one for like kind of brainless jukebox musicals, but the Britney Spears fan in me is genuinely excited. For Once Upon a One More Time. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but
I think they should just call it Oops and then open up, and that's what it's called.
I love it.
All right, let's get to talking about some J. Edgar Hoover here.
Oh yeah.
I've gotten through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover. Gee, that was fun and a half. When you've been through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover. Is a laugh. I've been through Reno. I've been through Beverly Hills. And I'm here. Reefers and vino, rest cures, religion and pills. But I'm here. Been called a pinko, commie tool. Got through its stinkhole by my pool. I should have gone to an acting school. That seems clear. Still, someone said she's sincere. So I'm here.
I do like laugh line on acting school.
Oh, God. Well, because she famously was, you know, doing what's its butt with Marlon Brando, you know, the method acting.
Yeah.
Right. She was all about that acting school stuff. But I love that lyric so much. Like, still, someone said she's sincere. It's like she's got something.
Yeah,
there's something about her. And I love how that whole verse is like the segueing to we're going to. What do you call it? The Red Scare to the blacklisting era.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is maybe not specific about this song. It is kind of true. It happens in every generation from like Golden Age Hollywood all up to modern day, where it's kind of a crapshoot in some ways, where it's like sometimes certain actresses and actors, it's just like, for some reason, they just hit.
Yeah.
It's like, why these two people came at the same time? And maybe this one was like, quote unquote, a better actor, but this is the one who had the better career just because there was something about them that just like clicked with people.
Yeah. And that's Carlotta.
I also love the lyric of like reefers and vino, rescuers, religion and pills, which was, I will admit, was basically my
20s. But oh my God. Forget about it. Like, yeah. I remember it well. And, you know, being an LA person, yeah, Beverly Hills sucks. You don't need to go there. What a thrill.
Everyone hates Beverly Hills. Like, we can all agree on that.
Yeah, no one likes it. Go to Hollywood instead. But I do like how she dug into Herbert. Some nice hard R's. I like how in the, I always hear Carol Burnett in my head, though, because she would go that Carol Burnett thing, or she would go, you know, but Elaine, you could just kind of hear her like kind of clenching her fists because they both sucked. Yeah,
they did.
Yeah.
Pinko and Stinko are also my call outs here, right? Like Pinko Kami, that was a pretty big thing to be leveled at back at that time, right before the Red Scare and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And Stinko, for people who don't know, is just like a way to say that you're drunk. It's a slang term for drunk.
And that's how Elaine kind of lived her life. It was like alcohol and insulin shots.
Yeah. And quite famously, like, stopped drinking for a while. And like in her last few years, it was like, you know what? I'm going to die soon. So I'm just going to start drinking.
Yeah.
Again. Like, that was basically
she earned philosophy. It. She earned it. It was fine. God.
Okay. We're going to do this next section here.
Okay.
Black sable one day, next day it goes into hock. But I'm here. Top billing Monday, Tuesday. You're touring in stock, but I'm here. First you're another slow-eyed vamp, then someone's mother, then your camp, then you career from career to career. I'm almost through my memoir.
Good little laugh line there too.
Oh God, her line readings, they just kill.
I will say, just to all my actor friends, I don't think there's anything wrong about being in stock theater. I just want to point
there's nothing wrong with touring in stock. It's wonderful.
But I think this is some of Sondheim's best, like, compact lyrics to tell like a huge story that is still a thing, which is first you're a slow-eyed vamp, then someone's mother, then your camp. Like, boy, does that talk about so many people.
I am, like, living through that. Like, right now, like, I'm going to turn 40 this year, and I'm like, I'm getting there. I'm pretty much camp already. Like, I'm getting there. And I just
drink, have your martini glass with you all the time.
Like, I mean, we're in the TikTok generation now. Anyone over 30 is just ancient. But
well, it's like, there was a video I was just watching recently about this kind of topic. The quip there was like, and as you know, if you are an actress and over 35, you cannot be the love interest of anybody. It's like, and it's weirdly true, it's unfortunately. Weirdly true. But
I do love how career from career to career, and how Elaine does that. She just did it with the exact same inflection, career to career. And that's how you got to do it, or else the joke doesn't land, because it's the rule of threes right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm almost through my memoirs. Always gets a big laugh.
Yeah. Like, I think you get to a certain point, like everyone writes their memoirs at a certain point. Or if you're a pop star, you have to write it when you're 19, because apparently you have something to say.
Yeah. But someone will buy it. The ghostwriter can write it. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I read Jessica Simpson's book. It was really good.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I always make that derogatory statement because I just remember Justin Bieber releasing an autobiography. Yeah. Well, autobiography. Huge quotes behind that. Yeah, I think when he was like 18 or 19, I'm like, what do you have to say?
No.
Like, I
don't know. Those are those books that like they used to have like in like that little bargain bin, like when bookstores exist, like at Borders or something. And
you know, remember books?
Remember that? Yeah.
Okay, there's this short little section we're going to listen to before the big finish.
Oh, yay.
But here's the short section.
Hey, lady, aren't you hoosis? Wow, what a look at you were. Or better yet, sorry, I thought you were hoosis. Whatever happened to her?
I like the idea of Sondheim, like, scrunched over his, like, notepad, scribbling away with his, like, Ticonderoga pencil or whatever he was using.
Yeah.
And being like, who's this? Yes, this will be great in a lyric.
Yeah.
And it somehow works in the context of this song.
It's like that thing with West Side Story. You have to make the slang timeless, or like you have to make your new slang. So like, yeah, aren't you who's this? but I do like Elaine doing that. Wow, what a looker you were. Like, that's She's bringing it on home.
That's what I mean. That's a thing. Like, that is such a, like, a character beat, like such an Elaine vocalization.
Yeah.
That's something you just don't get a whole lot in modern Broadway, where it's like, yeah, you were a character.
Sometimes she just screams it out. Like, sometimes that's like, the whole point, you know, and it works so well and it gets the huge laugh.
You don't need to be on pitch for this one, Elaine. Just go for it.
Just do your thing. It's in a nice low key. It's all good.
Okay. Well, here is the actual big finish of the song.
Good times and bum times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Posh velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer, but I'm here. I have run the gamut, A to Z, three cheers and damn it, c'est la vie. I got through all of last year, and I'm here.
Now, not to go against, you know, again, a Sondheim lyric here. She does change one small thing here as well, which is she says Christ knows instead of Lord knows. Mm-hmm. I actually kind of like the Christ knows better, though, actually.
Yeah.
I think it actually hits better.
It's crunchier. It's got Christ. It's got that like kind of bite to it. And of course, she digs right into it. And of course, it's just that kind of. I don't know. Lord feels like Lord knows, whereas Christ knows feels a little bit more like a curse, even though it isn't. But I love that. And I got through all of last year is just I did
very appropriate for modern times.
Oh, yeah. I did like a parody version of it on my YouTube channel, like maybe a year ago and had parody lyrics to COVID times. And like never was that more like, yep, I did it. I got through it.
I like we all did it, I guess. Yeah.
But gamut and damn it, that's great. Like
I will say too that if this show was to take place in Canada, you have to do something because they would say A to Z instead of A to Z. So they had to change something.
I've run the gamut A to Z, three cheers and damn it. C'est la ved? No.
C'est la ved.
Yeah, you gotta get something.
You know that old saying from Quebec. Yeah,
exactly. I like how Elaine does the she does it along with, and just kind of falls off like she's just like defiantly like stomping and screaming at you that she's still here, and it's just like you're not gonna kill her.
This is again comes back into that acting choices specifically, because different actors of course always are going to approach songs slightly differently, and there's this one which is like I'm still here, right? Like almost like proud, like hey, I survived this. But I've seen other actresses do it like I am mad almost, like I'm very upset, like and I'm still here. Or it's like some people option up, I've heard it even too, like they just belt that last note, so it's just like, I'm here, like, and they just go for it to the top of their register.
Yeah, when I did it, I was in a higher key definitely than Elaine, but I was a lot more like hey, like holding the note out, a little less like screamy. But you know, I was like in my late 30s, so when I do this again in my 60s, I'm sure I'm going to be a little bit more stompy and screamy like Elaine, as well you should be. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to take it, and I just really love her interpretation. It just works so well because she's just such a good line reader. Like,
yeah, exactly. And I think even Elaine has even had even mentioned that, where she was waiting for a while to sing this song, but then she saw people singing in their 50s, like, well, fine, I'm going to start singing this song. People in their 50s are going to start to sing this song.
Yeah, right.
But it almost gets better the older you get.
Oh, absolutely.
Because even if you can't, like, hit the notes, quote unquote, it's like you still can feel the song coming from them, and it works.
It makes more sense. Yeah, you have the lived-in experience to tell the story of this song. So
the other thing that I always find cool too, like the original person, Yvonne DiCarlo, who sang this song in the original Broadway cast. I just also love the fact that she was, oh my gosh, in the Munsters. She was the mother.
The mom in the Munsters.
The mom in the Munsters. So it's like she had that in her career already. She was coming back to the stage and stuff like that. There's even that added thing. So like, hey, I've seen some stuff here.
Yeah, I was on the Munsters, baby.
Baby. One thing I'd like to ask, this is sometimes an impossible thing to figure out, but if we were to take a look at the entire score of Follies, would this song for you show up in like top three, middle three, bottom three? Like where would it kind of rank inside of your personal radiance?
The Score of Follies. Let's see. I think I'm looking at the list right now of the songs. I think this is up there in the top three for me. I mean, I love this. I love Could I Leave You? I love Losing My Mind. Broadway, Baby, Waiting for the Girls. Songs, God, yeah. There's so many good ones. Ah, yeah. But I think just because, you know, I've loved performing it and I just love the story of it overall. I think it's definitely in my top three in the Score. For sure.
Yeah, it always gets jumbled here for me a little bit. Like, how would I actually rank this? Mm-hmm. When I first started this podcast years ago, part of my planning document was like, should I rank every song that we talk about?
Oh,
and I was like,
God, that's going to be too much work.
And I was like, no. It was like, okay, well, now we have to have a 20-minute conversation at the end of this episode and try and like fight our way to like, how do we rank this against each other?
Yeah.
And I eventually didn't pursue that. But yeah, it's hard even just for just talking about Follies. Like, middle, like top three or at least top five would probably hit somewhere in the top there for me.
I think so. Yeah.
Then you also have to layer on like which performance are we talking about? And that's a whole other can of worms you can open up. So, but Emily, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Of course.
If people wanted to see what you're up to, stay in contact with you, is there an easy way to do so online?
Well, there sure is. Let's see. I am at Emily A. B. Clark on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. I have a YouTube channel called Stealing Focus, so you can look that up on YouTube. We also have a Patreon, so if you look up Stealing Focus, you'll find us. Yeah, that's where you can find me. Look up Emily Clark. There's a million Emily Clarks in the world, but if you look up Emily A. B. Clark, you'll probably find me.
As a kind of a final question, as we round out the episode here, what Sondheim show that you have not seen a live production of is something that you're dying to see? Like, what is a Sondheim show that you have not actually seen a version of that you want to see on stage?
I've seen almost all of them.
Okay.
But Follies I've never seen on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would like to see that before all of them, because I'm going through my head and like, I've seen, whether it's like a community theater or like a pro shot or Broadway, Kennedy Center, like tour or something. I've seen almost all of them, but Follies, I've never, for whatever reason. I mean, people don't do Follies very much. Like,
no, I mean, it's
hard to do.
Expensive show because there's a lot of characters and there's big set pieces. You can shrink it down, but that being regardless of that, how close do you think there is to a Broadway revival of Follies?
When was the last one? That last one was like
2000 something. I can't remember exactly when it was.
I feel like it was over a decade ago.
Easily.
Time just all blends together for me now. It'd be cool. It'd be, you know, the original production was like one of the most expensive at the time, which is like quaint now when you think about it, because you really have to have that idea, you know, the whole idea of ghosts, but then you have to have a whole actual vaudeville set, but then you have to have like a crumbling, decaying theater. So there's all these different things you have to have. It'd be interesting to see what like a non-traditional take on Follies would be, like how much of it stands up if you take away the bells and whistles. Like, what does it look like in a black box? What does it look like in something minimalist? And I don't know. It would be really interesting to try it out or see what works, or unconventional locations, or an actual like dying burlesque theater or something.
Yeah. Like do the, I don't know what that would look like. You know, they did Sweeney Todd, for instance, in that pie shop, right? Like, yeah, let's do Follies in like this crumbling back lot somewhere. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah.
But something.
You know, I've seen a lot of different takes on theater out here in LA, or on traditional shows out here. And, you know, even just like the recent revival of Oklahoma, I loved, just because I like that we're taking these classics of musical theater and going, hey, you know what we could do with them? We can do what we do with Shakespeare and the Greeks, and we can mess with them and we can try new things and try to have a new take on them. And maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. Maybe we need a woke shapoopy. I don't know. But I would be interested to see what Follies looks like pared down, because the Score is beautiful. And like, you know,
like the Score holds up. It's just like, can we look at this in a different way? Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Sondheim seems to be being revived here a bit. You know, Into the Woods is being transferred. There's still this rumor that Sweeney Todd is going to be revived here. So we'll see.
Oh, we're about to kick off like a huge Sondheim celebration at the Pasadena Playhouse at the top of the year. Right. I feel like every theater company is about to kind of go through their Sondheim stuff with his passing. But I would really, there have been rumblings about a Follies film for a while.
And I know for
that would
now,
be but... really cool to see. I would love to see Hannah Waddingham as Phyllis.
Love it. Yeah. Actually, that's a good call. See, now I want that. I need to see that in my life.
And, you know, we're in a post-Tick-Tick-Boom world now. You don't have to dumb it down for the normies. You could just lean into the full-on theater-ness of it all. And
not to get too down the rabbit hole, I swear this is the last thing before we actually wrap up here, but that is the one thing that I was actually pretty excited about, is like, I watched Tick Tick Boom and I was like, is anyone else gonna enjoy this, because this is very musical theater heavy, and it's like friends of mine and other people like, yeah, they liked it, they got it. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay, I guess we're at that point where we don't have to like be precious or like afraid to be musical theater.
I know, we can have Bradley Whitford play Sondheim and be really good at it.
Really good at it. It's like, oh wow, he's nailing this.
Yeah. He does this thing with his hand at one point where I was like, Jesus,
For me, it was just lean in the chair. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly
yeah, that thing. Yeah. It was a lot. It was so good.
All right. Thanks, Emily.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to Alberta Blue Cross, and to Park Power this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, like I said, we continue on with Follies with Could I Leave You? And the answer is, of course, always no, not with all those Chagalls that you have. As always, a big thank you to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and Nina Criscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.